is the Kevin Shee Show.
Hi, Jay. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Yeah, I met Jay in EO Portugal. He was a guest speaker, and I was very impressed with your talk on disruption. And then now we're in an age of big disruption right now because of the virus and how everything is turned upside down. It's been quite a 360 degrees change since last time we met, isn't it, Jay?
Well, it just goes to show you that, you know, we're in an era of constant disruption between endless innovation and Mother Nature and the changing climate of the planet. So today's entrepreneur has to understand how to master disruption if they want to survive and thrive.
But I was talking to my parents and all that, and I think the frequency and the magnitude of disruption or volatility is not as great, you know, 20, 30 years back as now. It's just like things are getting more and more frequent. And then when one thing happens, the whole world catches it. It's not like, you know, you can escape it by going to another country. Everything is very unified right now, the whole world. Why is that,
well,
Jay?
Well, it's interesting that we've talked about how viral is your app, how viral is your business for 20 years now.
Yeah.
You know, so we've been using the terminology that things can spread around the planet instantly. We are all one click away from 6 billion consumers. So you only have to be right for a nanosecond to become a millionaire, a billionaire, or change the world. So we're all completely interconnected, both in the negative sense of the biology, but in the positive sense of you can launch a business anywhere and take over the world. So what the virus has taught us is you don't have to be in a first world country. You don't have to be in a major city. Everybody can build remote companies with remote workers living where they want to have quality of life. So that's a positive that came out of this.
Mm-hmm. I see. Jay, can you tell us a bit background about yourself, how you got into where you're right now to our audience, please?
Sure. I'm a serial entrepreneur who happened to be in the right place at the right time again and again and again. I started on the internet in the earliest days, and everything came to where I was. And by the earliest days, probably before most people listening to this were born. So I got on the internet in 78,
what?
Put the first video on a computer, did the first auction, which you know is eBay, worked with Reid Hoffman to launch LinkedIn. And
wow.
I've seen this pattern where dozens of friends became billionaires. So, you know, you work with Bill Gates and Paul Allen and then Steve Jobs and Branson, all these people when they weren't billionaires. And then you notice a pattern. We're not smarter than other people. We're no different than anybody, but we got different results. And the reason is how we looked at the world. And so I wrote the book Disrupt You to teach people. Mm-hmm. And I'm dedicating whatever time I have left on this planet to try to create as many entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. because that's the backbone of a stable society, is to have a middle class that employs people. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And so that's the purpose of Disrupt You. And I have another book coming out in first quarter of next year that takes the story and the journey further.
Oh, so you work with so many famous billionaires like Reid Hoffman, Bill Gates and all that. How are they different? How are their mindset different from the common entrepreneur or the common person? Like what do they see the world differently, or how do they approach things differently that separates them apart?
Well, a couple of things. When you really say to most people, first, most people don't have a growth mindset. They walk around with the woe is me. There's a cloud over them. I got this problem. I got that problem. If you have problems, congratulations, you're halfway to being rich. Because obstacles, problems are really opportunities in disguise. So if you have a problem, I'm sorry, you're not that special. Somebody else has the same problem. Solve a problem for five people, you have friends. Solve for a million, you're rich. Solve for a billion, you change the planet.
Yes.
So that's what it's always about. So these were people that looked at problems and said, wait a second, there's technology nowadays that can solve that. That's why it wasn't solved before. And for everybody listening that's not an engineer, everybody listening has written as much code as Steve Jobs, created a trillion-dollar tech company. Right. I've created all these companies over the years and sold them and taken them public and run all kinds of giant companies like Sony and Universal Studios. I'm not an engineer.
Yeah.
Engineers can be hired. You only need two things to succeed.
Okay.
Insight
what is that?
And perseverance.
Tenacity.
So Yeah, so Sassity, you know, that you have to get on your own, but I can teach anybody inside. I can show anybody how to have more deal flow than any venture capital company, how to instantly know where the market's going and what holes need to be filled. And it's as simple as that.
Okay. Can you give us the crux of the your book, Disrupt You, and how that's relevant to today's world right now?
So everybody thinks of changing the world because there's problems, and most people don't realize that change starts from within. So the biggest thing you have to change is yourself, because that voice says you can't do it because in third grade you weren't good at math. Now you think you can't do math, or you're afraid to speak because, you know, you were embarrassed in elementary school when you got in front of the class. Whatever those fears are, learning to harness those and turn those around. So the first third of the book is to break down how to disrupt yourself. Mm-hmm. The second third of the book is how to break down the value chain in business, from R&D and marketing and sales and all that, and show how to not just disrupt those pieces, but how to capture the value that you unlock. It's easy to disrupt, but it's a different thing to capture that value. And then the third one is, if you're satisfied that you figured out how to make money, that's kind of boring. Why not apply those things to the real problems, like the environment, like food? My newest company that I'm chairman of is figuring out how to take poisonous chemicals out of agriculture by using robots.
I've been following you on LinkedIn.
it's a simple, elegant solution. The technology is now here. So all you have to do is really look at those problems. And I teach you how to have a simple system of how, just starting today, not tomorrow, not a week from now, just write down three problems in your life. That's all you have to do today. Write down three problems. You were stuck in traffic. Okay. Come up with two more. But do that every day for a month. The first day, it's easy. Maybe the second day. But by the third day, you go, I don't have any problems, because you've accepted the world the way it is. You've become complacent. So start thinking moment by moment, what's a problem? Two kids in Tel Aviv were stuck in traffic, and they thought to themselves, wait a second, my phone company knows where my phone is. It knows where the other guy's phone is. If it tells him to go left and me go right, that was the genesis of Waze. They sold and became billionaires in 1 year without any revenue. There's a new self-made billionaire created every 48 hours. Wow. They didn't come from the right schools or the right families. What are they doing different than you and I? And that's what I teach. And I don't do it to make money. I'm doing it because I want to have a stable society.
Yes. It's amazing how disruptive, or how your mindset changes the world. But a lot of people, like, especially now with the virus, and they're probably like losing their job, or they can't make payroll. And then you ask them to be like, instead of focusing on that, to be positive. And it's hard to be positive when the whole world environment, especially the news and everything, is so negative. What are some of the rituals or some of the things you can snap out yourself of the daily negativity in life? Mm-hmm.
So here's a real simple one. And in Disrupt You, I walk you through the science behind the power of positive thinking. I'm not a hippie, tree-hugging, love-peace, essential oil kind of guy. I'm a hardworking capitalist. But the bottom line is, when your mind's in a positive mindset, you'll have better ideas, you'll be more productive, you'll be more likable, you'll everything in your life will go better. So when you wash your face in the morning or shave and look in the mirror, just say these two things. Okay. Today can be better than yesterday. Yep. And I have the power to make it so. And what happens is your brain releases dopamine when you say that. It's the same effect as cocaine on a brain. The synapses light up like Christmas lights on a Christmas tree. And suddenly your whole body's awake to opportunity. And if you're in that mindset, then you go, wow, everybody's out of work. What a great opportunity. What can I do for all these people? What problem can I solve? So the second thing is, it's not about me, me, me. It's what can you solve for the other person? And this goes all the way up. I mean, I've run companies. I just stepped down as being vice chairman of Deloitte, quarter million people. I've worked at companies that have had millions of employees under me. Yeah. You know, all those people that lost their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Most of them went every day saying, I hate my job. Now that you've lost your job, what a great thing. You don't have to hate it anymore. If you believe in reincarnation, you know, congratulations, you got more shots at this. I believe you got one shot. So why would you give it up for a job that you hate? Why not do something that makes you proud and excited? And I don't believe you get to live forever, but what you create and the impact you have on society can. So the next thing, all of those driven people that everybody said, wow, they're so driven, that's how they became billionaires, farthest thing from the truth. If they were driven by money, they would have given up early. Why work? What can you buy with $2 billion that you couldn't buy with one? Right? Yes,
exactly.
So they would have stopped. The reason why they didn't stop is they were purpose driven. The purpose of life is to live a life of purpose. When I first met Bill Gates, he had an idea that seemed common sense to me. Every house should have a computer. Mm-hmm. Now, the time he's saying that, zero houses had computers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But look where we are today. And we got there because of that belief and that mindset.
Amazing. So what about your second book? I heard that you took a kid and you mentor him and he became from like no job to become like a millionaire and like within a year. Can you elaborate the story about your second book
So the book's called Future Proofing. And this one, I've been locked in the house for a better part of a year for the pandemic. I wanted to turn it around just to follow the advice I just gave everybody else. Okay. This isn't a negative. I am not flying around giving speeches in 100 countries a year. I have the gift of time.
Yes.
What will I do with this gift? And so I focused on really putting out this book, which really synthesized everything that I've learned in my career down to 10 truths. If you accept these 10 truths, you will be successful. And then I put my entire life's reputation on the line by taking a homeless young millennial and mentoring him one day a week. I didn't give him any capital, didn't introduce him to any of my contacts, didn't even tell him what business to do.
Yep.
And by month 11, he was a self-made millionaire. And he's now future-proof. And that's what the book's about. Once you learn these skills, you don't need another job. You don't need somebody else being a gatekeeper to your success. You have the power within. There are a million ways to raise capital between crowdfunding and ICOs and IPOs and private equity. There's no shortage of money.
Mm-hmm.
What there's a shortage of people that are willing to work harder now so they don't have to work later.
Yes, exactly. Do you think that the world is getting more and more volatile and then which create more opportunities and more challenges at the same time? But as an entrepreneur, there are more opportunities right now looking forward.
Oh, yeah. This is the greatest time ever. When people ask me, is now a good time to start a business? I always say a year ago was the best time. Now's the second best time. You know, you should always start as early as you could. But here's what the difference nowadays. I'm on the wrong side of 50. When I started out, there was no everybody with a mobile device, everybody connected, everybody with 5G. There was no infrastructure. All that connectivity, all that cloud, all that free computing power, everybody has in their pocket more computer power than all the U.S. had to put a man on the moon, okay?
Yeah.
Now, you can do that to create a virtual business, or you can watch cats playing on the piano on YouTube. I mean, the choice is yours. So
exactly.
Those rich self-made people have the same 24 hours in a day that you and I do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They have no advantage over you and I, and it doesn't take an incredibly high IQ. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of educated, super brilliant people that I know that are unsuccessful. And there's a lot of C students that go on to donate the most money to their universities. So it's really about overcoming fear, learning how to really embrace failure. Mm-hmm. Failure is part of the process.
Mm-hmm. I see. If I'm a young person just graduated from school, do you recommend me starting my own business right away, or should I, you know, go for a big company, learn how everything works first, make some network connection first, and then start my own business? What's the options?
Well, it really depends on your background and what you've been exposed to. Okay. So, if you plan on going into a business, don't go work for a giant company. A giant company has 200,000 people, each one is a little cog that does a little thing in their little cube.
Yes.
So all that you're going to learn is how to, you know, fill up form number 5 and stick it in slot number 2. I mean, you're just going to be wasting and going until you want to shoot yourself. On the other hand, if you go to a startup, you're going to get to wear a million hats. Some things that you'll be good at, some things that you won't. You'll always be able to lend a hand and learn and be exposed to other skill sets. And this is how you really learn how to do it. The other thing, and I talk about this in Future Proofing, and I really explain it, and I didn't include it in the first book, and it was an oversight. Mm-hmm. And that is, don't fly solo.
Okay.
The real secret is finding yourself a good mentor. And I show people how to decipher LinkedIn to find mentors that want to help them be successful, that can give you that coaching, introduce you to people, introduce you to capital sources, introduce you to anything. I mean, you read my first book. I was a young, you know, young kid that didn't know anybody. And just out of sheer stupidity, I decided to write to the richest man in the world, Bill Gates, who I didn't know, and ask him, would you introduce me to the richest man in Hollywood? Because I have an idea how to combine a computer with the music industry. And Bill Gates did. And when a billionaire gets, you know, a letter from Bill Gates, they read it and they take the meeting.
That was pretty audacious.
Well, the world is created by audacious people.
Yeah. So my next question is, if I were to start a business, do you believe that technology or something in mind that the whole world is your customer is something that should aim for, like, you know, be the best in a certain niche market where via the internet everybody can subscribe to my service, buy my product? Or do you think I should just play it safe, you know, maybe get a franchise from McDonald's and then just, you know, work in the local corner and then just build it, you know, from 1 to 2 to 3? What's your advice for that in this current age?
So your question is, do I think you should go and do something that has unlimited potential, or do something where somebody tells you how much you're about to make?
Should I do brick and mortar, like local stuff, like, you know, open a store, open a shop, you know, and then maybe build a chain, but it's like more localized. Brick and
mortar. Why? It doesn't scale. Look at where all the fortunes have been made for the past 20 years. They're people that solve a global problem. Uber is a global solution. You could own 100 taxi cabs in Hong Kong. What good would it do you? You know, all these things. And what Silicon Valley has done, which most of the world didn't pay attention to, is they backed monopolies. If you have an idea that's good, they will give you enough capital so that you can own the world. Amazon lost money for 20 years. But during that 20 years of losing money every year, Jeff Bezos became the richest man in the world by losing money. Let that sink in. Most of the world's self-made billionaires have never made a profit. That's another misconception.
That's something like I really realized only like the last few months after this crash. I thought big companies has an advantage. And then, you know, even if they run into trouble, they would have the muscle to turn around. But then I think, wait a minute, look at all these new companies getting disrupting all the old companies. They're getting funded unlimitedly, right?
So here's the problem with big companies. And I've been a public company NASDAQ CEO, okay?
Okay.
When you're a CEO of a public company, of a giant company, you are on a 16-week hamster wheel. Okay. Every quarter, you have quarterly earnings. And you as a CEO made 2 boatloads of money every time you hit your numbers. So what do you care about? Do you care about long-term investing in research and development? Or do you care about getting your vacation home 16 weeks from now? Okay?
Yes.
So what's happened is the big companies keep no cash on hand, buy back their own stock to make it go up, and they don't invest in their future. So when they suddenly need a future, they go out and they acquire it. So rather than spend years of making their own robot to solve agriculture like I'm doing with Greenfield Robotics, they'll wait and go, wait a second, our old combines and tractors aren't selling. We need to get into robots. We're not going to hire a bunch of engineers one at a time and get in the market 3 years from now. We're going to go spend $1 billion and buy an existing robot company. That's how you do it.
Yes.
But I've sold money-losing companies for hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yes, I understand. So I guess big caps or like old companies do not have their muscle or advantage right at this age. At an age where like a new startup with a promising tech can have unlimited funding and runway and not be regulated by the government, I think that's their huge advantage. And that's why Amazon insists on never making profit until they have a certain size or Elon Musk, you know, a lot of these startups not trying to IPO until they must, you know. Right.
Yeah. So, it's really, there are unlimited amounts of capital if you can prove that you have a disruption for the marketplace, because nobody's looking to invest in a company that makes money. They're looking to invest in something that can scale.
Yes.
You know, my Reid Hoffman wrote the introduction to the book and is now the chairman of Microsoft and founded LinkedIn and PayPal and all these great companies. He's the thing called blitzscaling. That there's a moment where as an entrepreneur, you have to switch. The first beginning of your entrepreneurial journey, every nickel you raise, you have to make it look like $10. And every $100 you raise, you have to make it look like you have $1,000. Then once you prove the model, it's how fast can you spend as much money as possible. Now, a lot of entrepreneurs can't make that leap. But it suddenly is about grabbing a global market share and spend so much money that nobody else would back or invest in your competition.
Oh, okay.
So your defense is the amount of cash you have. Now, don't go throwing it away. Spend it smartly. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen too many people that start believing their own press releases and stumble. But that's the pattern. And I've done it again and again. I've watched friends do it again and again and again. I teach at USC, the largest engineering school in the U.S., how to build a high-tech startup. And I had two students do $150 million their first year.
Wow. First year.
Yeah. Now, they wanted to drop out of college, and that upset their parents. And I'm like, really? Would you rather they get a degree and go get that management job at that cubicle somewhere?
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's a cultural thing. Many cultures would rather their kid get a job at Google than start their own business.
Yeah. Yes. A lot of the Asian families too. I mean, unless they're very well background. Otherwise, it's like stability is something like a lot of Asians like they would cherish and all that. But I guess in this age of disruption, nothing is stable anymore. So you might as well take your shot.
See, again, I don't want to comment on another culture, but I think you're reading your own culture wrong. It's not about stability. It's that fear of failure, that embarrassment.
Yes, right? That's the hidden thing.
My son got a job at Google. Your son's sitting in an empty room somewhere doing what? I never heard of that. My own parents. I got a full scholarship to go to law school. All expenses paid, one of the top law schools in the U.S. Turns out, I never wanted to be a lawyer. My parents actually wanted me to be a doctor. I'm not even Asian, but it sounds familiar, doesn't it? My parents wanted me to be a doctor. I'm terrified of blood. So the only other choice in their mind was to go be a lawyer. And I'm like, that just sounds like a lifetime of paperwork. I'm not going to do it. And for years, they had no idea what I was doing. They didn't have a computer. They didn't understand the 1980s, what a computer and all this stuff was. And it wasn't until, you get appointed by the president or you work with the Pope or, all these things that they go, I guess you were doing something all these years. I don't know if you know the rock group Aerosmith.
Yes,
so Aerosmith. I worked with Aerosmith early on. As you know, I ran most of the world's record companies at one point or another. But the number two guy, Perry in Aerosmith, told his mom when he dropped out of Boston University, I'm only doing this, for as long as the band works, then I'm going back to school.
They're still around.
They're still around. They've made millions, but he still has to tell his mom, I'll go back to school when I'm done with this thing. If you think about it,
yes,
it's a stubborn people that made history.
Yes. Yes, it's not the people that that's working for somebody. I guess it's not about, definitely it's not about the money. It's about either contributing to society, solving a problem that makes it better, or just follow your curiosity. I mean, follow right. something that you find something that this is not supposed to be done. You think you have a better way, and you're there to prove it to the world. And money is just a side product.
Yeah, when you're young and the baby needs shoes, obviously you got to figure out how to pay the bills. But I had zero desire to be chairman of another company. I've done it all. I'm tired of it. I enjoy speaking and helping and everything. But an engineer that worked for me at Sony a decade ago came to me with an idea.
Okay.
You know, we're all killing ourselves by putting all these herbicides and pesticides to grow food.
Yep.
Here's what they do. One, they cause cancer. Two, they destroy the rivers and the streams and the fish, and we're just destroying the planet. It makes no sense. On top of that, once I learned about farming, which he was a son of a farmer, every time you till the soil, you're releasing greenhouse gases up into the atmosphere. Over 10% of all greenhouse gases just come from farming. So why don't we break down, why are we tilling the soil? Well, we're tilling to get rid of weeds. Why are we using herbicides? To get rid of weeds. Is there another way to get rid of weeds? So I live in California where we have fires this time of year. They just wipe out whole neighborhoods. And what you could do was rent a herd of goats in the 21st century. And they come in a rich neighborhood. They eat all the grass up on a hill. They go away and there's nothing. What if I had goats that only ate the weeds and not the plants? Okay. I tried holding flashcards in front of goats. They're not good learners. That was a joke. But I can make machine vision on robots and have them go up and down the rows of corn and soy and milo and sorghum and cotton and only get rid of the weeds. So we put a little herd of these 10 little robots in a field, and they can do acres in a day. No humans, no labor. When you look at Korea has to import workers to work in the fields. When you look at countries that have shortages of workers, plus it's backbreaking, why do it? Now these same robots can then also target place seeds, so you need less seed. They can also target deliver nutrients, so you need less. So it's not that I'm making robots. I'm making an operating system for agriculture. Yes. Now you can also then track that these are actually organic things that were grown that don't have any chemicals in them. Everybody that's not eating gluten, and again, I'm not a doctor, do your own research. I'm not making medical claims. But tons of people stopped eating gluten because they suddenly thought they had celiac disease. They don't have celiac. It's a rare disease. Some people do. It's very serious. But what they are is they're responding to the poison, the Roundup and the dicamba in these foods that are grown with it. You know, Monsanto makes these seeds that are designed to withstand those poisons. How do we put as much poison as possible to kill the weeds, but just a little less than it'll kill a person?
And, yeah.
Right? And that's what we're doing. And the poisons are not evolving as fast as the weeds. So fast forward to Greenfield Robotics. The farmer gets to make more money because he doesn't have to buy the poisons. People eat healthier food. And the planet gets less greenhouse gases. It's a triple win-win-win. Why wouldn't I want to get involved and solve that problem? And that's a global problem.
So can you describe what your company is called, how it was when you first got there, where you guys are now, and what's your plan for the company in the next few years?
Sure. So the company is called Greenfield Robotics. We started with a blank piece of paper. Four very smart people in the room, and then they invited me. And we built working robot last year, figured out how to refine the machine vision so it can go down rows of cotton and wheat and corn and just take care of the weeds and not the plant. Refined that over the past year, and now we have this summer, it's planting season. We have them working in farms in the Midwest. The company's based in Kansas in the breadbasket of the United States in the middle of the country. And so we'll take the data that we learned from all the various farms that we're working this year, and then next year do a major raise to go and, you know, change the world.
So your robots are in production already, and they're producing. They're working on the farms already, so they're not just prototypes anymore.
Correct. They're not in mass production. We have more than a dozen out in the field. So truck pulls up in the morning. The robots create their own GPS, map out the field. Yep. They go and do their stuff. There's somebody sitting there in case something gets stuck on a weird rock or, you know, a battery needs to be changed. Then they drive themselves back onto the back of the truck and you charge them. And the other neat thing is they can actually work at night. Now, nobody's ever been able to do stuff on farms at night. You know, machine vision doesn't have to use the same human vision. So it's an eco-friendly solution that everybody wins and the farmer makes more money. So, yeah, the next step is raising tens of millions of dollars to bring this to other markets and other countries. You know, we're only going to try to solve this problem in countries where people eat.
Yeah.
This is a global issue.
I think you have a big market in China, and I think I know a few connections for you. We can talk about that after the podcast.
Fantastic. Yeah, what's interesting about China is they have so many small farms that the giant ag equipment, those million-dollar combines, don't make sense on a farm that's 3 meters wide.
No,
these little robots are perfect, especially when you now think of modern China with the 4-2-1 type family.
Yeah.
You don't have enough workers for the field.
No, there's a one-child policy. The population is going down.
So the only solution to feed all the retired people will be robots in the field.
That's your solution. I guess that's a good solution to the population going down, or many countries having less and less population.
You know, Japan has an aging population. China has a shrinking population. You know, you also have people don't want to do backbreaking work anymore. Bending over and pulling weeds sounds horrible. I didn't grow up on a farm. I had to learn about farming as a chairman of a company. Let me tell you. Farming's hard.
And it's amazing how you can go from industry to industry to industry without, you know, you don't say to yourself, oh, I don't know about farming, and then and you back off. But no, I mean, if you have the right mindset, if you have the right experience and even network, you can disrupt any industry. Is that correct?
Yeah. Elon Musk brought me in when he bought Tesla. I mean, Ford's, I mean, airlines. I mean, the number of industries that I've worked in, but the methodology is the same. And it's no different if you're going to set up a little two-person company or a million-person company. It's going through the same process. So here's my question. If it's to answer your earlier question, it's the same amount of time and energy to open a local McDonald's as it is to launch something that changes the world and makes you a billionaire, which would you rather do?
Yes. But there is an analogy that, you know, if you have a McDonald's franchise, chances are that's the only franchise around the block. So you have a near monopoly there, right? So your failure rate is pretty low. Versus if you're you know, on the net, you're competing with the smartest people in the world, right? So there is a common fear that,
Here's the thing. The McDonald's, it's capped at what you can make. You can tell by traffic and body cap. On the other hand, yes, there's tons of people, but most people are too lazy to try to do something. So I hate competition. I've never gone into any business where I had a competitor, right? Okay. I'd rather be the best in the world if I'm the best in the world by definition, right? Yeah. If I'm the only person doing it, by definition, I'm the best, and therefore I also, if I'm the only person, have no competition. How many companies do you know that are making robots to get rid of weeds in cornfields?
Nope, I don't know any.
We're the only one. So guess what? We're the best freaking robot company in the world in this market. Okay? So now all that we have to do is just get better. And once we wake up the world to want to do this, to hold on to that turf that we created. I met, you know who Jack Ma is?
Yes, of course.
So I met Jack in the 90s, okay? Wow. When he knew he wanted to do something in the internet. And he went to a conference that I was doing, speaking in Hong Kong, and you remember him, right? He has an intensity to him. But what I didn't find out from him till years later is he had already launched Alibaba and had it for several years before he ever actually owned a computer. He didn't have a computer. He didn't know how to use a computer.
Amazing. Yes. So one final question. What are some of the advice that you give to the people right now, like facing the virus, if they want to start their own business? What are some general advice for you to give them?
So here's better than advice. Anybody that's made it this far into your podcast, I have a gift for. If you go to my website, jaysamit.com, jaysamit.com, I have a free 40-page workbook that is exercises to help you get the most out of Disrupt You and to figure out what your plan is, how to launch your business, and how to be successful. And that's my gift to you. No strings attached.
And I'll put it in the footnotes.
I have literally heard from people that have been through the exercise in 140 countries. And that's what keeps me going. I'm humbled by what people have created, what people see. It was in them already. I'm just helping you unlock it. And that's why I wrote Disrupt You, and that's why I wrote Future Proofing. Just to give people that little extra edge, because they know that that's inside them.
Well, thank you, Jay, for having you on the podcast. And I hope to see you soon when this virus blows over. And please do contact me when you come to Hong Kong.
Okay. And I hope to make you a billionaire by putting robots into China.
Thank you, Jay.
Thanks for listening. For details on this episode, go to kevinshee.com. That's Kevin, S-H-E-E.com.